changes and edits to the draft EIR. So in 5.1, mitigation measure 3.1 is the first being discussed there on dust control. This is a question for knowledge clarification. I noticed that or spray, a dust agent, has been stricken. And if you go back and look at the use permit from 95, from the 80s, from the 70s, I believe it was first mentioned in the 80s. I know it was definitely mentioned in the one in the 90s, mentioning the algae. Essentially, it's a vegetable type oil,
lignin oil.
Yeah, they use it constantly in Sonoma, Napa County on their road projects. Is there a reason why that is not allowable here, where realizing we're in a time of water volume and quantity being of concern, would it not make sense to use some type of a non-toxic, environmentally friendly dust agent to reduce dust as opposed to filling a water truck multiple times a day, running, burning our precious diesel and gasoline to spread said valuable water? Would it not be more environmentally friendly to use a dust agent?
County doesn't involve dust abatement anymore.
They commented air quality control, Siskiyou County. But that's my question. There are dust agents that are environmentally friendly that would reduce use of fuel, reduce use of water. I was just wondering why that was stricken. Anybody? Bueller?
Yeah.
I mean, if I could make one pass with a truck with an environmentally friendly dust agent once a day, as opposed to running a water truck on 10 trips over a given day, I'd much rather do the one trip, environmentally and as a business person.
Chris Cummings, from the perspective of developing each element of new construction that's going to have a permit on its own, it would be typical for that to be addressed in the permit process and in the specifications for each project. So, a dust palliative can come in a lot of forms. There's also a pine tar one.
Mm-hmm.
Caltrans still uses some petroleum products if it's not going to, go up, get in a watershed, and so forth. But it's based on the activity specifically itself. So it would make sense that one particular product wouldn't be identified or so forth and so on, because it's a common. Just like stormwater pollution prevention plans and what BMP you use, this is a BMP for dust control. So the dust palliative is one BMP.
No. I get that. My concern and my question is that for the mitigation measures specifically dealing with dust and roads, whether it's for project or for the under the use permit, all now read pave, use gravel cover, or use gravel cover on all haul roads, and spray a dust agent has been stricken. In some of the mitigations, even water was stricken. And so that's why I'm bringing this question, because dust agent, in my mind, could be straight water or some other product.
All the above.
Why is it being stricken? Because I don't think, being a horse person, I would like to ride a horse on the wrong type of gravel, let alone pavement, on roads. Water or some other dust agent should be acceptable.
Through the chair, Commissioner Fowle, the source of that comment is coming from a letter received from Fish and Wildlife specifying that they wanted water only due to potential impacts to endangered species within the 50-foot riparian zone.
Okay, so roads along the riparian zone, maybe I get that water only, but a lot of the roads for where the development is happening and where, according to the map, where the equestrian stuff is happening is well away from a riparian.
So you just can't go sucking out the river. That's
all you're doing again. But I mean, can we not put that back in to give them the option to use some type of a dust agent when it's not near a riparian zone? I mean, why get rid of beneficial tools that make sense? Mm-hmm. I get next to the riparian, no problem.
Okay.
But a lot of what's on the map and proposed is well away from the riparian.
Yeah. Well, I made the assumption of riparian. It's not stated in their comment here. They're concerned with runoff off the property.
I mean, CDFW is fine with that lignin material being used around the delta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the sentence reads, the department recommends against spraying dust suppression agents in any location where transmission to a waterway could occur.
Transmission to a waterway may occur.
Could occur.
That could be anywhere. Most everything ends up on a waterway if it's liquid sometime or another.
Mm-hmm.
Oy, oy, oy.
Whatever we do, I'd like to get this resolved today so we don't.
Me too.
So
give it
really
to the Board of Supervisors.
It's up to the project proponent if he wants to go there.
Yeah.
So
you've got one commissioner who's willing to add dust agent back in as long as it's not near a riparian area or potential high risk of entering a riparian. I'm trying to make this functional.
Could it be could we just say approved dust palliative? You know, in other words, if they're not going to approve a dust palliative, that's up to them. We'll have to work it out when we get there.
But
can we just say approved dust palliative? Is that a way to do it? Because the other thing is some permits mainly require two trips of a truck, and you have enough moisture in the evening to get the trucks in and out with no dust, or it's a wet time of year, you know. So
it's a mute issue.
Anyway,
my nativity here is who issues a permit for dust control?
Nobody.
Air pollution.
Yeah, and it's not typically looked at on most permits for, like, if we're going to build a building or, you know, whatever, we're cutting a road, that's a grading permit for the county, and, you know, yeah. So
Mr. Dean,
maybe it's a
question.
Moot point.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Just a question for clarity. Did you say that the State Water Resources Board made that comment for
CDFW.
That?
CDFW.
Yeah.
California.
If we want to change that, can we get the proponents in trouble, seeing how it came from the Water Resources Board?
Fish and Wildlife.
Pardon me?
Fish and Wildlife.
Same difference.
No.
If you don't have water, you don't have fish.
Yeah, another case that we could potentially have is where we have sediment transport and we potential sediment transport for an area, but we create a grassy swale, and that's a filter, and that's an accepted filter, so the water coming out doesn't have the pollutant in it. Okay, so there's potential, if we use a dust palliative, to have a containment pond that evaporates, you know, and then you just bury it back over. You know, so there's mitigative measures or ways to handle the material, thus we know it's not going to get in the waterway. So there's ways for us to address that. But they're saying that all the materials are not, you know, these materials as a blanket aren't approved. Well, did they analyze them, and which ones aren't approved?
And that's my concern, because the way this is headed, it's either going to be, when it comes time to build the road, improve the secondary access. Depending on the time of the year when the work's being done, that's going to require potentially a lot of runs with a water truck for dust abatement. And it would be more logical, in my mind, to run some type of a dust suppressant that will last several hours instead of 30 minutes.
And it's typically done around a receptor.
Yep.
So it depends what the receptor is going to be and what your conditions are.
So I guess the question to staff is, do we have the flexibility? It was a recommendation from an agency. And certainly we acknowledge, yes, near riparian areas, we understand, but we would like to allow the flexibility for approved dust abatement agents through consultation with CDFW be available for the project proponent, particularly when doing road improvements related to even as specific as the secondary emergency egress.
Well, let me comment. The EIR analyst says in response to that comment, the comment further states that a mitigation measure MM3.1 remains as is, meaning allowing dust control agents. The impacts to fish, wildlife, and plant communities should be analyzed. That's pretty nebulous and pretty broad. And
yeah, I saw that there.
And it's pertinent if it's toxic, probably not pertinent if it's non-toxic, however that may be defined.
And so that language is fine, but then in 3.1 on page 5.1, spray of dust agent is then stricken, so we're not being consistent.
Right.
One of those has the availability, this one here does not.
No, I understand. And I Fish and Wildlife appears to be suggesting that, in respect, perhaps way down the rabbit hole, that whatever would be used for dust agent, if you're going to allow them to use dust agents, needs to be analyzed for impact on the fish and wildlife. I mean, clearly that concern is addressed at whatever's toxic, and I don't know anything about dust control agents, so I don't know if there's non-toxic ones as well.
Can we use the agency lingo, as Commissioner Hart said, to use BMPs?
Yeah.
BMPs will be allowed. That takes into consideration location, slope, soil type, etc. Right. Is project proponent comfortable with that? Or do you want to leave it as is? We may have spent the last 20 minutes discussing something you're fine with. That's just things I notice.
Yeah, more flexibility is better, but it gives us wiggle room, and it's a broad statement that gives us the ability to potentially handle it at the time.
Okay. So can staff make, and that's not one of the conditions, it's a mitigation measure. Does that modification need to be mentioned in any potential motion?
Yes. We're not going to be at this point to modify the final, but as far as a recommendation to the board, I make a recommendation to modify it at that level.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've made that note?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. My next one, staying on 5.1, moving down to mitigation measure 8.1, is simply a grammatical correction. It says prior to the initiation of construction, habitable structures should say prior to the initiation of construction of habitable structures. You're missing a second of. And then at the end of that 8.1 needs to reflect the language that we changed earlier regarding annual inspection. Okay, that one's been addressed. On 3.1 on the next page, same thing with the spray dust agent. That question was addressed. Then on page 5.3, repetitive again, 8.1, on an annual basis, that reads fine. That's not an either or, so we're okay there. Water usage, no problem there. Page 5.4, impact 3.3.8. You have an extra impacts at the end that should be stricken. Should just read cumulative impacts to hydrology and water quality. In the striking should have also included that last impact. Then I'm done with that document. If you have other questions, go ahead while I jump to the next one.
Yeah, I want to go back to...
When you have 1,600 pages to go through, this takes a while.
Yeah. That's an understanding. Plan, your evac routes, you have a foot trail evac route out of your upper camp.
Yeah.
It looks like to me on the map that I have, here it crosses out of your property onto somebody else's property, and back into your property, then back again out into somebody else's property. Is that correct?
Only the first time.
This one right here.
Right there. That upper corner.
Right. On the western end.
On the western end.
That is correct. The second, Tim Lloyd at Kidder Creek, the second one is an easement across the property for the road. And the kids are walking down the road. And that first one is a fire road that it was addressed by the owner that, yes, we do have, and they agreed to allow us to use that road to go through their property. That belongs to Little Page.
That's a written, recorded document?
Yes, I believe.
If it's not recorded, then you can sell the property and then you're out.
If that was the case, we just walked down our own road, which is on there too. Okay. We call that the fire road because of the secondary access to get out of Timberline. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we do have that in writing, and it was addressed by Little Page in the last meeting. Both of the brothers that own that property commented about the fact that they gave us the right to use that road. So my guess is, yeah, definitely have it in writing.
I'm not questioning that, but it's got to be in writing and it's got to be recorded so that it's there. Because if it's not, and they sell the property to somebody else, they can shut that off, and then we've granted something that we don't legally have a right to grant.
Yeah.
And again, that's a civil issue between the landowners.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
We're okay at something here.
Yeah.
And Andy working, and if they did, it makes no impact. We could just walk down the road. That is on our property. It's a couple minutes difference to walk down that way, but not significant.
In case of fire evacuation, do you need permission?
What's that?
In case of a fire evacuation, do you need permission?
No, that's not what he's talking.
When you get lawyers involved, everything can go sideways. And I'm looking at liability and wow.
Since it got quiet on that end, a question from or directed to Andy. When you were doing the presentation of the evacuation.
Yes.
I wrote this question down to bring up at this time. Should this go through, whether it be to 600 or 800, whatever it's approved for, if it's approved, I didn't see in the development plans, is there a plan to purchase one or more vehicles of some type to allow for a greater number of passengers with a potential evacuation, i.e. a bus, large van instead of 10, a 24, etc. Is that in the plan?
It's something that we've discussed. It's not something that's in the plan. The current plan is to use our vehicles with multiple trips, and then to use the buses that we would have an agreement with that they would come in and we would use those. One thing that's not in there and that's hard to measure is that half of the days we have camp running, we have a bus on site anyway. We use the buses to go, you know, down to the river. We use the buses to kind of go out and about. A lot of times they're sitting there waiting. So we do oftentimes have buses there already. They're not in there because they're not always there, so we wouldn't be able to count on them every day. But we do have buses kind of coming and going, and as we get busier, it's likely that we would have buses there potentially every day. I just didn't include it because it's not part of, it's not a set, hey, we have this every day available to us. The other things we do have available to us, and as it shows in that graph that I showed you in one of the appendices, with the reduced number, we wouldn't need the buses anyway.
Feel free to jump in here, guys. I'm going through my notes.
Now I've got a question. In your new pod that's going to be constructed, you have a discharge that goes back to Kidder Creek, correct? From what you explained to me?
No, you can't do that anyways. Once you take water out of a diversion, you can't divert it back into Kidder Creek. So the water that goes into the new pond, out of the Barker Ditch, goes back into the Barker Ditch.
The bypass
up there that goes out into that concrete structure that they stuck in the stream, that's just bypass water.
That is Fish and Game's bypass.
Yeah, that's at the Fish
and Game.
That has nothing to do with us.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. All right. There was a comment here made earlier today about the economic benefit to Scott Valley. How come no analysis? I don't know that we've ever done any kind of an economic analysis about the benefit of somebody's business venture on a use permit in this county, let alone, I've never seen the state ever do an economic analysis on an EIR that they perform.
That would be a supervisor, not planning commission.
Yes. So, you know, that question is asked, and you have an answer.
Just generally speaking, it's not a part of the appendix G with the CEQA review.
The requirement is the CEQA process.
Well, let me amend that a little bit. Further on down the road, not typical of CEQA projects, but we happen to have one here where we have statement of overriding considerations of why a project might be beneficial despite some significant effect, then economic analysis becomes appropriate and justification for the project. In this case, I remember somebody said, the expansion of the project will lead to larger staff and 47 locals hired. That's appropriate for the statement of overriding considerations.
Yeah. I'll go back to the traffic business. I brought this up when we went over the draft EIR.
about the speed on that road, on that paved road. Me, just judging by the driveways and how people park in their driveway right on the road, that an appropriate speed limit probably ought to be around 25, 30 miles an hour. But it's my understanding, and I just learned that in August, was that Caltrans is the one that sets the speed limits. Am I correct in saying that? Or does the county have, the county road department have the ability to go out there and set that speed limit?
It's Caltrans and CHP. So in order to change a posted mile per hour sign, that's a legislative action. There has to be, you know, so it's a coordination effort with Caltrans and CHP.
On a county road?
Mm-hmm.
If they take the average
for a public road
speed, don't they? If the average speed that's driven is what establishes the speed limit?
But yet you told me earlier today, or told all of us, that we have a right to put and make things even more stringent than what guidelines and regulations say, that we can do that when we were talking about all the fire stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to my knowledge, not related to, you can't do that related to public roads. That's a legislative action.
Yeah.